This podcast contains adult language and some childish behaviour. While we make no apologies for this, if it's the sort of thing that offends you, you have been duly warned. Welcome to the Dice of Doom podcast, a podcast in which a handful of nerds talk about nerdy shit for some undetermined amount of time, and then fail to edit it, and wait for it to become non-relevant anymore, and then don't release it because they're too embarrassed to. Which has been the story. I think this is what, the fifth or sixth podcast episode that we've recorded without
actually... We have some ghost episodes sitting in some hard drive somewhere.
Yeah, including, I have to say, including a two-hour review of the Player's Handbook for D&D 5th Edition.
When it just came out, by
Duncan, where he sat and went through every single class, every single race, every single feature, and reviewed it. And if there's anyone who's going to review something like that, because he has an encyclopedic knowledge of all the editions of D&D, except for 2nd Edition, which he hates with a great... I just don't understand that, but anyway... Whatever.
To be honest, I'm not sure you should have released that.
Yeah,
it sounds a bit tedious.
Well, I actually listened to parts of it. I thought, actually, you know what? Some of this is kind of interesting. I'm learning stuff too. And I actually kind of felt a bit bad because you put all this effort into it and then I never got around to editing it and releasing it.
Shocking.
I know.
You're a bad person.
I am a bad person. That's 2 hours of his life that he invested and I just went, nah. Anyway, tonight I am joined by my brother Paul.
Hello.
And our good friend Wayne.
Hello.
Who had...
What? I did nothing.
I know, that's the whole thing. I was prepared for something and just nothing. Anyway, if you've listened to any of our past episodes, you'll understand why that was irritating. This is... We decided that it was probably about time that we discussed our first impressions of the brand new 5th edition of D&D. Yes, I know. I just realized that my wine fridge has just started its compressor. And so you might have this annoying...
We are also joined by our wine fridge.
I have called Winifred.
Winifred.
Which is actually pretty close to wine fridge, and I was pretty happy about that. So anyway...
Hello, Winifred. Yep.
There it is. That faint, distant electrical humming is Winifred doing wonderful things to my exceedingly large wine collection. Anyway... More to the point, we have recorded, I think, 3 or 4 first impressions of D&D Next or 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons. And I think it has come time that we actually release our first impressions instead of just talking about them and then leaving them to waste away in some binary format somewhere. So I have run and played 5th edition. I think, Paul, you've played 5th edition and Dwayne, you've played some 5th edition.
A little bit.
But we've all read the books to some degree, and...
And we, of course, took part in the D&D Next...
Playtest as well. And I've got to say... This is probably the most sensible game to come out of either TSR or Wizards of the Coast in terms of role-playing.
I agree.
Before we say anything else... It's almost frustratingly sensible. All of the nerd battles that you used to have about why this, why that, why blah, 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 you can't do it.
The interminable quest to understand Thaco, no more of that.
No more of that. No more wading through 5 pages of how to frickin' grapple somebody.
Yes.
You know, now it's an opposed strength or dexterity check or athletics if you have it, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Just, you know, roll dice and compare. Wait, what? Really? That simple? What the hell? Really? It's a paragraph?
Yes.
Bloody hell.
We don't have an appendix of explanatory text?
Exactly.
How come?
I don't know if I can take you seriously now.
Yes, indeed.
I quite missed the 134-page fact.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, the fact
you... Luminous errata.
Yeah. the FAQ. That was probably the biggest test right there, is just the grapple thing. Because I know in second edition, there was like 5 or 6 pages. And then online, there's somebody who's done, I think it's Dragonfoot, if I remember. I want to obviously recognize the person who did it, but I think it was Dragonfoot or something along those lines, who did an 11-page explanation of the 5 to 6 pages of the grapple rules in first and second edition.
Yeah.
See, at that point, you know you're in trouble.
Yes. What did you major in your MA? Grapple rules in D&D third edition.
Exactly. Yeah. And I would almost believe you.
Yeah.
You know, that'd actually be like, yeah, fair enough.
Sure.
I get that. That is a master's degree worth being proud of. Because there's no other way you could legitimately say that, you know, you invested in a large amount of time in trying to understand it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the only way would be to sort of like, oh, I'm earning some university degree that's going to see me succeed in the future. Asking people if they want fries with that. Yes, I mean,
reminded of a quote, don't make fun of them, Lisa. These graduate students have only made a terrible life choice.
Yeah. Which I think actually applies to all of us here.
That's about it.
Yeah. Anyway, moving on. The thing that I have found most refreshing about 5th edition, and the longer it's been around, the more people have found things to complain about, because people do that, because, you know, there's a little bitch in every single human being. But the thing that I have found most refreshing about it is that it just wants to get out of the way and let you tell a good story.
Yeah.
So I have started working on a... Probably the litmus test is what the Dungeon Master's Guide is about. In previous editions, it's been filled with magic items, or it's been filled with a whole lot of waffle about how to be a good DM. Mm. Try to incorporate this in your player, and your players will love you. Try to do this, and you might get a gift on DM's Day. You know, those sorts of things.
I don't remember any of that in the first edition.
The first edition was just tables and tables of how to fuck up your players and your characters.
And an awesome random dungeon generator
at the back. First edition was the other half of the game, wasn't it?
Yeah, in fact, it was the part of the game that the players weren't allowed to know but needed to know in order to play the game.
Yeah, that's right. Never tell your players how to actually play the game.
Exactly, it's a secret. It's a mystery. You need to be initiated.
Yeah,
that was the... honest to God... Because we played through the Temple of... I don't know if we've talked about the Temple of Elemental Evil campaign that we played through. Have we done that? I don't think we have.
Haven't we?
No, we'll do that next topic.
All right.
Anyway, so when we were creating characters for the Temple of Elemental Evil campaign that we played through, the original first edition classic by Gary Gygax, well, not by Gary Gygax as it turns out, but by writers that were writing under Gary Gygax's name, mm-hmm. and he was happy enough for his name to go on this particular...
Yeah, like Leonardo da Vinci, he had a lot of helpers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, let's go with that. 300 Spartans fighting the Persians, there was a lot of help there.
Plus a few thousand
other people that we just don't talk about, you know. So, yeah. So it much in the same way.
Mm.
So one of the things that we found so frustrating about first edition when we actually decided to play it, and so we could check that box in our lives, we have done this. Tick.
It was on the bucket list.
It was kind of on the bucket list.
Yeah.
Temple of we'll talk about that later. Anyway, there were so many rules in the DMG that were required to create your character that it was just so frustrating. We actually had to get printed summaries from our DM as to actually how to create your character. And fortunately, when they decided to go through, we got the saving throws and some of other stuff, blah, blah, blah. And also we got a small summary of all of the changes that Duncan's dad had implemented as part of it, which was brilliant, but we'll talk about that later. Fortunately, they changed that in second edition and going on. You could actually just, as a player, buy the player's handbook and you'd be good to go. That's still the case, thank God. The thing that I found quite interesting, of course, is the random dungeon generator in the first edition rulebook has, to some extent, been recreated in 5th edition. Now, before you start...
The top of the hat, the beginnings. I like that.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing. I have created... I'm still working on it because it is so in-depth, and it's been actually close to a month now. Duncan and I sat down before game one night because he came over early, And we decided to use the random module creator that is, I couldn't say it's a dungeon creator. It's not. It's a module creator. It's actually bigger than just a single episodelet. We decided to go through it and just use it entirely to create a module. The thing is, it's become so big that I'm actually starting to think, you know what, I'm just going to sell it for $1 on DriveThruRPG or something, because it is so huge. And the thing is, it is so good. The DMG
Wait. Does it include, like, wonderful fantasy names, name generator? Czar Blacks the
actually
flatulent or something like that?
Yes. With a caveat, but...
sure.
They're not as lame as that.
Oh, wow.
The thing... Okay, so you're kind of preempting another thing that I was going to talk about. So the DMG is actually all about running a great game, and if you're out of ideas, here's how we can help.
Right.
And so the random dungeon creator is not actually about creating just a dungeon. It's actually about creating a scenarios or a set of scenarios or a module or something else that actually all fits together.
That is so important in today's sort of gaming, right?
Oh, exactly.
People are... In almost any time period of gaming, but I think maybe even today's gaming even more so, because people are so time poor,
yeah.
Right? So just to be able to rock up somewhere and just go with it without too much preparation is a wonderful thing.
I would like to say, yes, that's a good point. However, we have discovered it takes a lot of time. The thing that I'll say about...
Assuming it's that large, you don't need to do it all ahead of time, do you? You can do it in chunks.
You can do it in chunks, absolutely. What we found was a surprising amount of detail. Like just an unbelievable amount of detail. It created a very rich environment to play through. So even down to what the rooms smelt like, what the rooms had in them, down to...
It was yours, Zavlat, blessed the flatulent, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yes, that's right. Actually, funnily enough, feces features rather predominantly in the smells of the dungeon that we created using the system.
Wow.
But you can create multiple different types of dungeons. So you can say, well, is this an abandoned ruin? Is this, you know, the cesspit?
As you make your way down the steps, you smell feces. I'd like to go to a different dungeon, please.
We can facilitate that. Just wait a second while I roll some dice.
Yes.
We joke about it, but the thing is, it also goes through all of the background stuff. Mm. So what are the overarching goals? What is the twist at the end? Who are the NPCs that are going to betray you? Who are the NPCs that are going to help you? What is the thing that you need to complete the quest? So it's not just about creating a random dungeon. It's creating a dungeon with purpose.
Mm.
That was the thing that really stood out to me. So it was not just, oh, well, there's orcs in this room, and there's orcs in that room, there's goblins in that room. It was, no, you need to find this particular villain, whom you can only kill by finding out what his mother's name was on the fifth moon of whatever, blah, 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 blah. So you can actually... To some spoilers, in the module that we've created... You need to hunt down a villain who can only be killed by uttering his real name. You are sent on the quest by a teacher who will send along one of his students who will ultimately seek out to betray you in the end.
Hmm.
You are going to need to find assistance from some of the denizens of this dungeon who happen to be the ghosts of wizards who used this dungeon for worshipping their wizard god.
Huh.
That is all randomly generated. That's the thing. With some, obviously, manipulation to make sure that it all fits in some sort of cohesive storyline. But that's what we're talking about. Then, at that point, you start populating the dungeon.
Right.
And that's where it's sort of like perhaps most interesting. It's not just a sort of like, oh, you go in, you kick the door in. Oh, look, kobolds having sex. It's more sort of like, why are we here? Why are we doing this? What are the real reasons? Obviously, Winifred has some opinions on this as well. What are some of the real reasons you are actually going about this?
Well, obviously, because you want to have sex with kobolds.
Well, who doesn't?
Oh, yeah.
I am here to clean the kobold pool. Okay.
This might be an outtake.
You know, it should be.
Yes.
But it won't be. I think people are too familiar with us at this point. And there is a real reason why we put the explicit tag on our podcast.
Yeah, true, true.
Anyway, it's not because we swear occasionally, believe me. And we may still...
It's because of the random kobold sex.
Damn yes. Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not okay, really, if you stop to think about it. Please don't stop to think about it. Anyway, so I've been running a reasonably large game over a prolonged period of time. We have 8 players, and we play every 2 to 3 months, which is incredibly frustrating. But, you know, we have to actually coordinate people to come in from various cities to actually play the game. I have found it such a wonderful system to actually just let people do what they want to do and just play the game. You know, it gets out of the way. Combats are quick, fast, vicious. The equipment lists, the magical items in the book, everything just is so sensible. I'm so kind of... If you could be proud of a development team... Yeah, you'd be
the one.
This would be the one. Sure. I there was just something about it. You just go, you know what?
Yeah.
Good job, guys.
I must admit, you know, when we started our little one, I created a warlock, and I quite enjoyed the idea of coming up with this warlock. It was very interesting. The text was very flavorful.
Mm.
I find it interesting that actually incorporated the soul, Cthulhu sort of mythos into it all again. After a period of time of not being allowed, as it were.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the background of it. Do you know
whether I'm not sure what the backstory
paid royalties
is.
For it.
Who knows?
I would have thought that would be mostly public domain by now.
The stories are public domain, that is true. However, in a role-playing context, a lot of it's actually been held by Chaosium. And when we come to talk about first edition rules, I actually spent quite a considerable amount of time and money tracking down a Demigods and Deities book that had the original Cthulhu monsters in them.
Mm.
Because there's only one edition that actually had that. And most people of advertising it on eBay, etc., didn't actually say which edition, and I didn't want to tip them off that they actually might be holding something that was actually more important.
Valuable, yeah.
So I may have perhaps 5 or 6 different copies of Demigods or Deities and whatever it is, just trying to track down one that actually had Cthulhu in it,
yeah.
Because they actually got slammed. And there's a whole stack of other things as well, like other companies have actually gotten into a lot of trouble trying to create a Cthulhu role-playing game without licensing it from Chaosium.
But maybe D&D is big enough now that they don't worry about it that much.
Hey, look at this middle finger. Yeah. You.
Our lawyers are bigger than your lawyers.
That's sadly not the case.
No.
We can hire this guy from a mall lawyer. So can we. The other thing that I found really quite alluring about the 5th edition D&D is how much emphasis is placed on your background story as a tool to creating your character.
Mm.
It's not just... And the thing is, it doesn't feel tacked on because it actually affects your stats as well, so it's completely integrated. And I also like the fact that, unlike a lot of slightly more pretentious games... I'm looking right at you, White Wolf. It actually... They help you out. Do you know what I mean? Like, they actually give you quite a lot of information. And they actually say, you know what? If you're not feeling inspired... Roll this dice and we'll do it for you, which I think is also brilliant.
Yeah,
because let's face it, if you're building something quickly, or you know, you are actually feeling legitimately hungover, you may not actually have the energy to, you know, divest in creating a character. I actually really like that, like the idea of backgrounds and the differences within the races and everything else.
It seems like it's actually taken this real step I wouldn't say backwards, but it stepped sideways from 4th edition. 4th edition was all about very much close to a battle simulator, right?
Yeah.
And this one said, no. We are a role-playing game, so let's actually construct these roles.
I think there's always the sort of like the temptation to flog a dead horse because, you know, it's fun and easy. But they've taken... The perhaps 3 or 4 good ideas from 4th edition and left the rest behind and created sort of a updated modern version of the best things in 3.5 and you know, some of the more sort of modern sort of gaming ideas that we have.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't feel like... The combats that I run, we actually... That I've been playing, we actually run on whiteboards. And it actually, at the end of the combat, it actually looks like one of those descriptions that you get from... There's lots of arrows of people movement, you know, and all the rest of it.
Kind of looking at one now, it kind of looks a bit like a team sport.
Yeah, exactly. It's sort of like, yeah. Where do I go now, coach?
Yeah.
Or a cola.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, that was an underground cave, so it actually might look like a colon, you're not wrong. And that might be sort of little blocks of nutrients floating through it.
Mm. A bit like a liver.
Yeah, a bit like a liver, I suppose. Would be nice to have one, but I rather suspect that I have killed it.
But, well, why don't we flog a live horse then? Because, on one hand, I think if you want a crunchy system, I think D&D 3.75 or Pathfinder is probably better.
Yep, agreed.
Five has cleaned up some of the edge cases around multi-classing.
Mm, a lot, actually.
And there's been some advancements there. But if you really want something crunchy, I think 3.75 or Pathfinder is probably still better. And if you don't want something crunchy, why the hell wouldn't you just play Fate or something else? I mean, quite frankly, I'm kind of... It's kind of in no man's land for me. I would actually be more interested in playing Fate right now than D&D.
Interesting.
Point. Interesting.
I think it's a sliding scale, right?
I've got to say, that's a classic Dwayne Snipe, by
yeah,
the way.
Yeah, it is. No.
You and I go off on some tangent, then he comes up with some kind of
you're
like,
right.
Actually, you're completely wrong.
It's an interesting point. But, of course, there we're talking about extremes, right? So I think it's actually a sliding scale.
Oh, absolutely.
I actually do enjoy a little bit of crunch in my game. You know, even though I'm majorly a character-driven sort of role player, I do like a little bit of crunch once in a while.
You are, for all intents and purposes, the classic theatrical player.
Yes. Yes, I am.
Unfortunately, his voices are better in game. Just ignore that. The thing is, there is a richness to the D&D game that you do not find in Fate. There is a ease of play, I think, that Fate still doesn't have. I think changing the way that people think about... Okay, so it's playing Spirit of the Century. Tagging situations, tagging the environment, tagging the way that you're playing the game still requires a shift in thinking.
Yes, but you've been playing D&D derivatives for 20 years.
Yes, and that's the point I'm trying to make.
My point is, though, that that's kind of second nature to you to a certain extent.
Mm. That's what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to say that this is a continuation of a logical progression. So if you are used to these sorts of games, this is a nice sort of trade-off, so to speak.
Yeah, I think they're different flavors of a much-loved genre, right? I mean, I love Fate to Death. I love it to bits. It is very different.
I'm not just talking about Fate. There's other systems you could talk about here as well.
I totally agree.
But I'm just saying, if you don't really want the crunch, then maybe you don't need to stick with D&D at all.
No, that's true.
And if you do want the crunch, maybe Pathfinder would be better anyway. I mean, it's all... It's a very rubbery kind of personal decision and what you're interested in at the time.
I think it's a solid choice, quite frankly.
Yeah, I've got to say, I think it would be tempting to say that Fate would be a good fit for a lot of people. I think that it falls flat where there are not the resources or the history or the world that's been created for D&D. I think if you're looking for just getting in and getting the game done and having a good time and all the rest of it, I think it's easier to achieve in 5th edition than in something like Fate. I think...
I don't know. I'm speculating here, but I think if you'd been playing Fate for 6 months, you would probably find you could adapt the D&D world with no preparation whatsoever.
I agree with you. But that's 6 months, isn't it? I think if we're looking at a logical progression from, you know, through... Oh, okay, so let's say people are playing a lot of 3.5... 3.5 D&D, they're playing 4th edition D&D, they're sort of moving on to the next thing. They're going to move to 5th edition and it's going to be a better game.
Yeah, here we go. This is what it is. If you're a D&D player and you love the whole genre and you love that particular style of game, D&D 5 is better than all its predecessors. If you're into just
maybe like role-playing games, Pathfinder. It depends. It depends where on that spectrum you lie.
Yeah, that's true.
I personally think it's better. Anyway, there we go. I did like 3.75, but I think 5 is better because it's slightly more in the direction that I like to play.
Mm-hmm.
However, I think you're quite right in the fact that if you're into other sorts of gaming, that you don't necessarily have to stick with D&D. Sure.
Particularly with the Fate Worlds and some of the other source books that have been created for Fate recently, there's actually a lot more to promote it as a fantasy setting.
Sure.
I think that the when we talk about Fate, we're talking about Spirit of the Century, basically
we're also talking about Dresden Files, Bulldogs, and there's a whole bunch of systems that are using the same underlying core.
Same core, but we're talking about sort of quite well fleshed out environments is what I was trying to say. So you're looking at things that are actually well resourced. So perhaps saying just Fate, you know, generic Fate might not be doing it.
If you say Spirit of the Century, right, you can say, hey, steampunk. And so, like, there's not enough resources out there for steampunk. No.
Yeah, exactly. There is.
Well, there's enough steampunk out there.
I have to say, though, there was a particularly proud moment when I was my daughter was visiting recently and she said, oh, I'm totally into steampunk now, Dad. And I was like, oh, thank God. You are my daughter after all. You're wearing all black just like me, drinking coffee just like me, and telling me that you love steampunk just like me. Yeah, I think we might be related. But more to the point, I think you have a large group of players who are used to playing a D&D product, and this is, I think, a logical progression. Ignoring 4th edition, I have to say, it is a logical progression to a modern version of D&D, and I think that the resources available for this particular version, particularly the printing of the basic rules for free, which I have to say there are still players around the table that just pull that up and that's all they're playing from, I think that's brilliant. I love that. I think this is actually a really good move. This is a really good game. I love it.
Well, that's not a new move, though. I mean, it's not. It's the OGL all over again, kind of.
It's a bit more sensible.
It's a little bit more restrictive, but
with good reason.
But yeah. But they still did get provided the rules for free, the basic, right back in the day. So. Yeah.
You know what?
But yeah, it's a good idea.
I might have to make a retraction. In the same sort of section that we did this, I was saying steampunk. I think what I was meaning was pulp.
Pulp and steampunk are largely the same.
They're very similar.
No, they're...
Okay, so they share a similar origin, but they are quite different.
They may be bedfellows, but they're not necessarily exactly the same.
No, they're not exactly the same. No, they're not exactly the same at all. Not by a long shot.
Couldn't let the sector go without actually... having mentioned, oh crap.
Oh, it's all right. I think we all knew what you meant.
Yeah.
No, Spirit of the Century is not steampunk, but it has.
It has elements of it, doesn't it?
It has elements of it. Yeah. Yes.
Sort of that. And I think. Pulp does have some sort of weird science stuff going on.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? It does.
So maybe not the steam engine.
It wouldn't be hard to actually sort of combine them or even.
You have this blurry line between the two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think sort of the whole pulp thing is contemporary steampunk, if that makes sense.
Mm, sure.
So it's sort of you know, we've just left this era, but this is what we think the future will be. And steampunk is sort of, oh, look at that interesting era. This is what we think their future could have been.
Mm.
And so they're pretty...
It's a very minor difference, isn't it?
It's a very minor difference.
Yeah.
And in a way, steampunk is sort of... projecting a lot of our modern ideas of technology onto a steam-based setting in a way that the contemporaries didn't actually do. They actually sort of thought more about electricity, actually.
Because of, you know, physics.
Because of physics, exactly. And also because, I think, of hope. I think they all sort of like, you know, electricity is like the great thing that's going to change the world. Yay, we can kill people with electricity. We can do things with electricity. Yay, powers.
Well, it's interesting if you have a look at like Shelley's Frankenstein, right? The thing that wakes Frankenstein's monster up from death is electricity. It's this strange, weird new invention that no one really understands.
Exactly. So it must appear like magic.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. In the same way that when you're trying to explain quantum physics to students, and they just sit there, surely, so that's black magic. And you have to say, you're not wrong. It is. to a certain degree. I mean, this is what any great sort of civilization has to go through. It's like, this is an unexplainable, misunderstood new science. Yes, it appears like magic.
Well, I mean, I suspect there's probably not more than a few dozen people in the entire world that understand quantum mechanics.
Exactly. So it's hard not to think of it as a form of magic, because nobody really truly understands it, except for the aforementioned cabal of, you know,
Illuminati. And even then, probably they're half wrong. So
exactly. Who knows?
Yeah.
We've gone so off topic. Oh my god! And even for us, this is off topic.
The title for the show, though: Dungeons and Dragons and Quantum Mechanics.
Yeah, I think that is the title of the post. I have to do that because, quite frankly, I think that'd be hilarious.
Yeah,
and we'll get a whole stack load of people going, "What the fuck?
Yes, what are you talking about?
What?" And then they'll listen to it and go, "Oh,
it does kind of make sense."
For those bait and switch.
Yeah, the classic. You could almost work for BuzzFeed.
You could kind of imagine that there's some kind of quantum entanglement going on between 5th edition and 1st edition.
Ooh. Oh, actually, you know what? You almost could. And if I hadn't had at the moment a bottle of wine in me, I suspect we actually could discuss that at some length, in a reasonably intellectual fashion. However, I am willing to concede that I am not up to it, quite frankly. And willing...
maybe you've never been quite so up to it.
It's possible. It is possible. And I won't rule that out. However, I shan't inflict such investigation on the dear listener, because they have tolerated it enough as it is. As promised in the previous segment of this show, we have decided to, once again, I think for the third time, talk about the Temple of Elemental Evil. I need to get some, like, you know, massive echo effect there. And from the first edition, we thought... Exactly.
Yeah.
We thought that it was a good idea at the time, and in hindsight, it might not have been as good an idea.
It was still an awesome idea. It was a great idea.
Yeah.
The implementation was maybe slightly different.
We should have left it as a good idea. And something.
Yeah, you're blaming Duncan.
No, I'm not blaming Duncan.
I'm blaming being Gary Gygax. I'm looking right at him and saying, you bastard, what the hell?
Good.
Why? Yeah. Why are you blaming him?
Because he designed a...
Because he put his name on that frickin' module.
Yeah, but it's practically like an octogenarian right now in role-playing game terms.
That's true.
It's practically dead. It's so old.
Okay, all right.
And I did warn you.
That's true, you did. And with good reason. Dwayne was the only member of our party who had actually played through it previously. In fact, from memory, your experience of the original playthrough was so bad you didn't want us to go through it.
It took a year.
Yeah.
And
that's
quite frankly, I wasn't massively inclined to do it again.
Yeah. And having played through it once, I can understand that. And I appreciate your willingness to still come along while we were playing through the evil that is the Temple of Elemental Evil.
Yeah.
Okay, so you know how they say you should never meet your heroes? This is one of those times when I think the entire Temple of Elemental Evil, first edition, the whole thing, would have been better left as sort of like an idyllic past. It's not, you know how when you sort of talk about the golden age of certain civilizations and everything else, and if you were to go back and live through those, you'd still realize that they didn't have indoor plumbing? I think this is exactly the same. Or the internet. This is exactly the same. You can say, yes, this was the golden age of the Roman Empire. Yes, they were still pooping outside and they didn't have the internet. So to a certain extent, it was still pretty shit. And I think this is a classic example of that.
I'm actually stamping on the historian in me at this stage, but okay, carry on.
I understand. Look, yes, I have a history degree too.
I know,
but
you do.
That's the thing.
It's fine.
We're using it as
an analogy.
It's an analogy, and it is.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
Role-playing games have moved on.
So much.
It's like going back and watching a movie from the 60s. So, as a good example, The Italian Job. They made a remake in 2003, and it's from, like, the late 60s or something or other.
Mm-hmm.
But you watch those, and they would almost not be the same movie, because pacing has changed so much in the last 40 years. So, modern cinema audiences are just going to fall asleep.
I tried to watch the original Ocean's 13, and I found that having little micro-naps throughout it did nothing to hurt the story.
Yes, so it's just...
Wow.
Different expectations these days for modern cinema, and in this case, role-playing game audiences, right?
Yeah. The ease at which your character died and the whole sort of, the entire party is lost forever sort of scenarios, or everybody dies right now. They have chosen the wrong door of three. Those sorts of situations, you go, oh my God, how a modern role-playing audience would not tolerate that.
Yeah.
And I think Duncan was right. Duncan ran it for us. I think he was right to say that just doesn't happen in this. He also sort of quickly read the room as we were going through, and he said, you know what? Here's the new map. And all the rooms that had just nothing in them were actually left out.
Yeah.
But I think you've got to kind of look at it in a historical context.
Mm.
It was, I mean, Dungeons & Dragons came out of chainmail, which came out of war games. It's an adversarial thing.
Mm.
Modern role-playing games are not really in that same spot anymore.
No.
But back in first edition days, it kind of was.
Yeah. So the whole idea that you're actually versing the GM was actually a very real thing.
And I guess we might have missed a little bit of a flavor difference, right? If we went into room after room of there's nothing in here,
right?
So you would have gotten the feeling of an empty sort of area, which we didn't get from saying, okay, and these are the boring rooms, don't go in there.
Yeah.
You know?
So we actually got even, well, this is the thing, we got a slightly more exciting version of the story.
We got a very much more exciting.
And we still thought it was shit.
But
yeah, kind of. So shit, we actually...
A year, right?
I must admit, we did actually spice it up rather a bit with the insertion of the insane a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's various things.
I mean, we created
like
a tiki bar in the elemental plane of
water, where we could surf the monsters there. And there was that point where we used a four-poster bed to sail across an underground sea and fight a lobster.
Which we then... It was a giant lobster, which we then boiled in a vat of butter.
Yeah, exactly. Which
Okay, there were moments of insanity.
There was moments of insanity. Well,
but I think we were driven to insanity.
Well, more to the point, I think we were just playing ourselves in our natural game. In a gaming system that was probably not prepared for us.
Perhaps.
But you see, I mean, I've played most of the modules before that, going right back to the very first X1 from D&D Basic and all that kind of stuff. And it's not particularly out of place.
Yeah.
It exists in this historical continuum, and it sits there quite nicely, but that doesn't mean you should try and bring it forward.
There's a small part of me that realizes, you know what, we're poking fun at the past because they didn't understand the future. How quaint.
Interesting point.
So you're asking yourself, has it aged particularly well? Probably not. I think modern audiences would look at it and just go, oh my God, what the fuck were they thinking? But you've got to remember that it was 30, 40 years ago.
It's like watching Thundercats now.
On the other hand...
Yeah, exactly. I was watching Thundercats right now and going, oh my God, how the fuck did they get away with that shit?
Yes.
Thundercats, oh my God, my phallus is growing.
Yeah,
it's just, seriously, what the fuck? Anyway, moving on. Yeah, exactly. I was watching that again the other day, just going, no, that's not okay for children.
I feel slightly excited
and violated.
Disturbing.
I'm sorry, Dwayne is giving you the long suffering look.
I noticed that.
He's going,
go right ahead.
Once the
point.
Once the two brothers get it out of their system, they, you know.
This is what games night is like.
Exactly. Dwayne's just giving us a slightly patronizing look of, God, they're at it again.
Okay, shutting up right now and listening to your wise point.
Yes.
There's no wise point here.
Damn, I was so looking forward to it too.
Man, where are we going to go now?
I know, we've built it up and now there's nothing.
Exactly.
Just like GameSight. Anyway, moving on. I think coming back to it, there are some interesting things. I'm glad we did it because it shows the heritage. D&D is a game that I love, and I've loved it my entire life, as long as I can remember. Well, you know, at least since I was 13. And sort of understanding where you come from is actually quite interesting, right? And because it's a big part of my identity, playing it was kind of important. I think it was necessary to go through. I joined D&D in second edition, and second edition had fixed a lot of first edition's horrible, horrible, horrible mistakes. And I still get just...
Nah, I'm not sure about that. It was cleaned up presentation, but not,
but not still, massive differences D&D at all.
Second edition was magnificent.
I would have to disagree. I think problems. Second edition is a huge step up from first edition.
I think rules-wise, it actually was less than you might have thought. Presentation
of those rules.
But the thing is, it was definitely improved.
Presentation is a huge deal.
Oh, absolutely.
With D&D and with role-playing in general. Right, you mostly ignore the rules and you play the game, but the game is what is the flavor presented to you, right?
And also it changed how accessible that those rules were.
Yeah, true.
And that was a huge step up.
And the production quality was a humongous step up.
Yeah, exactly. So the second edition, I think, was a much cleaned up version of first edition.
It certainly wasn't a revolutionary step.
Evolutionary step, but it was an important one, and it certainly did a lot to change how the game actually held together and how easy it was to play and everything else. And as a young gamer picking up role-playing for the first time, second edition was so much more approachable than first edition. I mean, looking at it now, I don't know where I would have started with first edition. I don't know how people started with first edition full stop. I mean, because it's so hard to find rules.
It is very obtuse, and the writing style certainly doesn't help.
No.
And the organization is appalling.
Oh, more than appalling. But it is almost a crime against humanity.
That was kind of half of the charm, is it's this kind of tome of wonder. You honestly never know what you're going to get when you turn the page.
No.
You know, that's actually really interesting.
We're laughing and we're going, yeah, actually, that's kind of true at the same time.
Well, that's the thing. That's the truth to it. But that's really interesting because coming from... I started in second edition as well, right? And I've gone through all this history of role-playing games not having seen that bit, right? Me knowing the smell of the books of second edition, right? That's a visceral sort of experience of mine. You actually now are relating this little bit, which I just don't get. This little bit of role-playing history, of experience as lived. You know, I just don't get because I wasn't there at the time.
Yeah, and I have to say, it's interesting because I probably bought about 30 first edition books, you know, as I was going through. I got perhaps a little too excited about the whole idea of us playing first edition, and I had to have the complete collection, and now I do. The smell of the books is so different. Yeah. And it's funny because, you know, the moment you opened up...
That's because the ones you bought had all been owned by a chain smoker.
It's funny you mention that because, yeah, that seems to be the current, the theme throughout all of this. Oh my God, I have cancer. It is just so thick with smoke. And that's kind of, I suppose in a way it has its own sort of...
visceral appeal.
Charm, I guess, in a way. You know, you can sort of imagine the previous owners smoking over a game and the whole room becoming foggy with, you know, everything. I kind of get that, you know. And I've found, like, remnants of Doritos and Mountain Dew in some books that I've bought. And you sit there going, oh,
my
yeah.
My test matching myself.
Yeah, exactly. But that's sort of like, that's sort of in the back of my mind. I cast magic missile, yeah. Doritos. It's sort of like, you know, oh yeah, I kind of identify that. It's kind of cool. But the smell between the different editions is so very...
It's like the ghost of Doritos bath.
Exactly. Wow, that would be illegal to sell right now.
Yes, sure.
It is 100% artificial colouring and flavouring, which is why it's glowing in the dark now.
Yeah, wow.
So it's funny when you sort of talk about the smell of the second edition rulebooks. Because sure. Occasionally I get them out now and I still smell them and go, oh my God, my first campaigns. Oh my God. It's And people must have that from the first edition books. You know, and the cheap paper that they printed them on.
Yeah, must have.
You know, the cheap paper that seems to just suck in any kind of smell that's in the room but and store it for centuries.
It's kind of funny though. I mean, remembering the second edition... sort of the initial adventures we had, and how, thinking back on them, how utterly immensely shit they were, right?
Yes.
How utterly immensely crap.
We were 14. I don't feel embarrassed about it.
I think that's the rules.
Yeah.
It's not just that. It's the imagination. It's the stumbling forward into this idea of story. And we didn't need much. We needed a tower, and there was a kobold in it, and I killed the kobold, and there was a deck of many things, and I drew it until I died, and that was it. That was the game, right? Oh, wait, I had used my burning hands on a cow because I didn't want to use it. And these are my first experiences of gaming.
You're right, that is pretty shit. Mind.
They are shit. But at the same time, I remember how they felt back in the day.
And it's actually, as shit as they were, they're bringing back fond memories.
And I remember flicking through the thing and saying, holy fuck, I can, in my imagination, own a mace? Holy fuck, this is amazing, right? At the time, it was so intense. The experience was so intense. And now I'm going ho-hum.
Mm.
How amazing is that?
But that's kind of where I see D&D 5, to be honest. Is it, to a large extent, it's a nostalgia piece.
Interesting.
For me, anyway. I think to a certain extent, I've kind of moved on. And it's kind of occupying a space that, while it's a lovely space, I'm not excited about anymore.
It's interesting, perhaps, to put it into some context when you stop to think about our role-playing experiment. When we went through, you know, 12 games in 12 months, we did that because we were bored with D&D. And we played so many different varied systems that had, that were the polar opposites of D&D, you know, because we were bored with D&D. And I think because we had played, I think in 2.5, maybe 3 years, we played 36 different games. We finally had gotten it out of our system enough to come back to D&D to play first edition. And to play fifth edition now, it's like, oh, right, here we are again.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I can appreciate that. Right? I can appreciate that. And I think particularly for players like ourselves, where we're interested in the different and the sort of unusual, we might be bored with 5th edition to some extent after a while.
Sure.
I can get that.
It isn't really eclectic enough, is it? It's no. Very generic.
Well, I mean, for someone who wants that high fantasy experience, I think D&D is a great place to start.
Mm.
It's ubiquitous. It has it's simple. It has been developed really nicely. It's got all the sharp pointy bits filed off. But it
was perhaps most telling is what I reveal here that I'm a teacher. But students of mine in years 10, 11, and 12 who are avid role players, and that's a new experience for me in, you know, 20 years of teaching, to actually have students go, oh, I'm a avid role player. You have a D20 on your keyring. Oh my God, you must be a role player too. And it's like the nerd handshake, right? The thing is that they're bored with D&D 5th edition.
Hmm.
And so they're asking me questions about Shadowrun. They're asking me questions about Ars Magica. They're asking me questions about Mutants versus Masterminds. You know, those sorts of things. They are now sort of treading in new water because they're done with D&D.
See, Shadowrun is almost 20 years old. In fact, it may even be 20 years
it's
old.
It's older. It's close to 25, I think, from memory. We played the 20th anniversary edition when we did it in 2012, 2013.
The Vampire had its 25th edition a couple of years ago.
Yep.
I mean, so
these are very...
Where's the kind of breakout games that have come out in this century, right?
Fate.
Mouse Guard.
Yeah.
Still not that brilliant, really.
I don't know.
Burning Wheel as a system.
Yeah.
I don't think any of those games are commercially successful in a way that...
Fate has been because
in
of
a way
strength
that
of Dresden Files.
White Wolf or even GURPS or these other systems... See, the other second-tier systems were back in the day. They're still very, very much of a cottage industry.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Reading through whatever it is that Evil Hat write when they do a new Kickstarter, they talk about how they have enough money up their sleeve now to do whatever they want on the strength of the Dresden Files.
But I think
so
to a certain
even then,
extent...
You're talking about like three guys working in a garage.
That's exactly my point, is that
so it's,
the reason they've got enough money to do that is because it's not really an industry. It's three guys working in a garage.
Exactly. So we're really essentially talking about a very small group of people keeping games alive through, you know, the sheer love of the hobby. And still willing enough to pay $50 for a rule book, you know, even though you could potentially download the PDF if you wanted to, but still trying to support the industry that you love, because, you know, if you don't, it's just going to go away and die.
I know you're the same, but I've bought a humongous number of systems that I'm not going to ever play.
Nope.
Just mainly because I kind of think they're interesting.
Yeah. You could just look at my library.
And I've got PDF copies of them, but I've also gone out and bought them.
I don't have any... Here's the thing. If you don't provide a PDF of a book that I buy in hard, you know, like a hardback version, I get a little pissed, quite frankly. And that's why I really like what Evil Hat do, where they say, look, you've bought the copy of the book. Here's the PDF for free. Show us the receipt and we'll give it to you. And I really admire that sort of thing. So, you know, you're sort of like the guilt-free ownership of PDFs because, yes, I do actually buy an awful lot of the hardbound books. And I know that a hardbound book costs the same to produce as a softbound book. There's no increase in cost. I buy the hardbound because I know it's going to last longer and because it's supporting the industry. I do that because I have a disposable income. I'm one of the lucky few who do. And I think that's important for all of us to do that, to support the industry that we love. Because if we don't, then it will go away and we'll end up, you know, playing games that were written 20 years ago because nobody's written anything new. Having said that, of course, you know, people like us will write games like Goblins and provide it for free just because we'd feel guilty charging money for it.
Yeah, go download this piece of crap.
Well, I don't know. I mean, will it get to the point where you don't need a new system?
I hope that never happens. The thing, when they released the OGL, I was kind of like, oh, God, no. Because I like rule systems. I like them being different. I like learning different rule systems. And when they said, we want the one game system to rule them all, I was like, oh, God, no, don't do that. Mm-hmm. That's contemporary at the time. You know, this is sort of like, you know, we're moving from second edition to third edition. Everybody's really excited. And they go, it's free. Everybody can use this. We want everyone to use, you know, D20 system. And I saw it for what it was, the death of gaming. You know, and it was. I mean, everybody came out with just bland shit, you know, from there on in.
Yeah, but there was still other companies producing, that kept on producing their systems.
Yeah, I mean Mongoose and various others.
Well, Mongoose did a hell of a lot of D20.
They did, but they also did their own stuff. But yeah, they did a lot of D20, which probably kept them afloat.
Yeah, but I mean, White Wolf was still around, and Steve Jackson Games was still around, and Eldorette was still around. And
they all had a very bad, you know, end of the 90s, early 2000s.
Absolutely. But then that hasn't really changed, I don't think. I saw some figures relatively recently that was comparing the role-playing game sales to board game sales to Magic sales. And there was like an order of magnitude between each of these things.
Yeah. It's so funny that we could almost sort of point at Richard Garfield and say, thanks, dude, for killing our hobby.
Well, I don't know. I mean,
harsh.
I know it's a bit harsh.
I mean, you could easily point at computer games and
yeah.
But there's so many other awesome things to do these days, isn't there?
That's true. And I hear that internet pornography is quite the thing.
Having never looked at it myself.
No, of course not. No, because I'm a committed relationship, and that would just be, you know.
Exactly.
Oh, I thought you must have been talking about having a webcam up and upstairs somewhere.
Lol.
Anyway, we should probably move on quite quickly. Yeah, it's quite. That's
Gus.
Did you say discuss or disgust?
Yeah, disgust.
Hard to say. Mm. So, Temple of Elemental Evil. Yeah, that's where we started.
That's right. Hey, we won.
We did, in the end. I died.
Some of us won.
Yeah, I died.
But you were a traitorous bastard and you died.
That was kind of fun, I have to say.
Yeah. So everyone won in principle.
Except for me, perhaps, who died in a very sort of literal sense. I played an evil character, and I tried to betray everybody at the end. And yeah,
everyone tried to betray us, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, I know. Everybody was betraying everybody at the end. It was kind of like, really? Okay. Yeah. So classic first edition, really.
That's right. No, it was fun.
Everything you hear about it.
Yeah. It's all true. It's all true.
Yeah. This has been a production for Dice of Doom. You can find us online at diceofdoom.com and on pretty much any social network you can think of at Dice of Doom.